Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
We return to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Brought to you by Digitex. Managed print services to keep your printing costs down?
Yeah, Digitex does that.
Digitex.ca on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 1:34 in Edmonton. Bob Stauffer. Brendan Escott with you. Royal Pizza, Pizza Past, and so much more. Edmonton owned and operated for over 50 years. All April, enjoy a free 2-liter Coke product with the purchase of any two large pizzas. Order online at royalpizza.ca or download the Royal Pizza app from the App Store. The Stauffer recommendation is the Mediterranean chicken. Brendan Escott's a big fan of the Texan. At this time, we welcome back to the show. He did a double hit for us on Monday, our NHL insider, John Shannon, for Legacy Heating and Cooling. Get your AC today with no payments and no interest for a year. That's how you build a legacy. Legacy Heating and Cooling. John, we're gonna do this. First of all, how you doing? How's it going?
Great, Bob. How are you?
Good. Total curveball, yeah, but just the sort of thing that I like to do. We'll get to the trade deadline and, you know, which teams do you think improved and how we shape it up for the playoffs and long term business prognosis for the team. When did you start actually on the television production side? Was it mid-1970s?
My first job was at Hockey Night Canada in October of 1977. My first job at radio was in September of 1976.
Okay. Do you recall watching the Montreal Canadiens and the Buffalo Sabres in the mid-1970s? Would have been the 74-75 season.
Sure. The year? Sabres' third year. They were an up-and-coming team. Perreault, Guerre, Robert, Martin, Jocelyn Gavremont on defense. You know, they were a pretty good hockey team.
And they upset the Canadiens, as you would recall. I don't know if it was considered an upset because they actually finished ahead of Montreal. But do you know what I remember about that? I don't know if people are aware of this. Buffalo had home ice advantage, won 6-5 in overtime in Game 1, won 4-2 in Game 2. Mm-hmm. Game 3 and Game 4 went back into Montreal. This is the first year Guy Lafleur became a superstar player in the league, right?
Yep.
The Canadiens, do you remember the Canadiens just absolutely destroying Buffalo? Like, crushing them.
I do. I remember that. The interesting thing about Lafleur by then was, and let's remember that Scotty Bowman had taken over coaching in Montreal by then, too. So there was a learning curve for some of those players with Bowman behind the bench. But the reason Lafleur took off was after his third year in the National Hockey League, he had a long talk in the offseason with Jean Béliveau. And Béliveau told him at the time, and Béliveau recanted his story many times, is that he told him to be himself. And the first thing he needed to do was take the helmet off. And he took the helmet off, Bob, because he wore the same helmet that Stan Mikita wore, that Mike Foligno wore.
The Winwell.
The Winwell, yeah, he wore that. And Béliveau told him, just be yourself and take the helmet off and play the game. And Lafleur exploded that season as one of the superstars of the 70s.
Just think about this for the listeners out there. The Canadiens won Game 3 7-0. They won Game 4 8-2. So they outscored Buffalo 15-2 in two games. And then the Sabres won their second overtime game in the series, 5-4 in Game 5. And then won in Montreal in a game that the Canadiens dominated the back half of the game, 4-3. And they ended up losing to the Flyers in 6. And then the Canadiens would come back and win the Cup the next 4 years. So it's just, I just remember that series as a kid thinking, how, like, how does a team outscore a team 15-2 over two games and lose the series? You know, and I wasn't born when the Pirates got blown out by the Yankees. And
I tell you what, though, ask the Vancouver Canucks that same situation in 2011. Because if you recall, they won tight games at home against the Bruins, and every game in Boston was a whitewash for the Bruins until Game 7 in Vancouver, and then the Bruins controlled everything in Game 7. A very similar scenario. It was a tight game for the Canucks to win at home, and then the Bruins took over at home at TD Garden.
Do you think the rivalry, like what I remember about that year, is a lot of our listeners did not want to see it now. The old school listeners grew up, you know, liking Bobby Orr and Phil Esposito, and you know the Bruins had a lot of fans from the late '60s, early '70s, but nobody wanted to see Vancouver win the Cup. Do you think that sort of, like, do you think anybody, like, how would people in Toronto be if the Oilers ended up winning the North Division? And some might say it's a long shot, and somehow found a way to win the Stanley Cup. Do you think they'd be supporting the Oilers in the Stanley Cup final? I mean, you're there in TO, or conversely, do you think they'd be angry that Edmonton got gifted Connor McDavid?
No, remember, this is a team that got gifted Austin Matthews, so the Leafs kind of understand that. Leaf fans do. I would tell you that there has been nothing in our country, Bob, as polarizing as the Vancouver Canucks of 2011. It was the province of British Columbia against the world that year. Everybody in the other nine provinces in the three territories were cheering for the Boston Bruins, it felt like, and everybody hated the Vancouver Canucks. I think one of the things comparable to the 1980s would be, because Connor McDavid is from Ontario, that if the Oilers were the Canadian representative in the third round and the fourth round, there would be an unbelievable following, as there was for Gretzky and his guys in the 80s. I think there'd be an unbelievable following for the Oilers in Ontario and the rest of the country.
You know, you just mentioned Matthews, Gretzky, Connor McDavid. Circling back, is Gilles Perreault one of the most underrated star players that the league had throughout the 1970s?
Well, there's no question he was a superstar. The fact that he played in the small market long before there was a lot of national television is that but I think at the time there was always something that said Perreault was great. Remember, he was a guy that made Team Canada 72.
Yeah.
2 years after. I mean, 2 years after junior hockey, playing in Victoriaville, he was, and in many ways, the game in Vancouver, the only positive thing out of the game in Vancouver in 72 was the fact that Gilles Perreault went end-to-end and scored against Tretiak. So from that perspective, I think people did understand how good Perreault was for the longest period of time. You know, it's funny you talk about the Sabres of that ilk. That was a team full of superstars. Full of superstars when you think about it. And had one of the great goaltending combinations of the 70s in Bob Sauve and Donnie Edwards later. But Roger Crozier was a great goaltender there early. But when you had the French Connection line, which was a famous line at the time, and then you had Danny Gare playing for you, and Craig Ramsey was there, one of the best
players
of all time. Don Luce. Jimmy Lawrence. That was a team. That was a team for my generation, Bob, and probably your generation. We saw a lot of.
I like them.
Well, and here, let me throw one out. Yeah, this is going to throw a curveball at lots of people. For when we were kids, the CBC radio network used to carry
Sunday night hockey.
Yep. And they did a ton of games from Buffalo because it was easy to travel from Toronto to Buffalo to get your crew there. And we heard a lot about the Buffalo Sabres on radio in those days, not on television, but on radio. So there's a real affinity for that Punch Him Lack team for people our age and a little older.
Yeah, no, they were they had style. There was some panache to that team at that time. Danny Gare. I remember Danny Gare, for a little guy, he could fight. Like, he did okay against Clark Gillies one time. The only time I saw him kind of Ben Wilson, he decided to use the stick, I would have too against Ben Wilson. But Danny Gare was a highly competitive guy who could score as well. As you know, he scored 50 one year, so he was pretty good, 49 or 48, whatever it was. Pretty good player back in the day. So they were an interesting team. Perreault was not a small man either. Like, he was like 6'1", 210, big shoulder guy, and he could skate. Like, he was an all-world talent.
And became, within an eyelash and the turn of a wheel, of becoming a Vancouver Canuck as opposed to a Buffalo Sabre in the expansion draft of 1970. Imagine how different the franchises would have been if Gilbert Perreault had gone to Vancouver as opposed to Dale Talon.
Was that a time in which Quebec was producing the best players in the world?
Well, remember, that was still near the end of the time when Montreal could protect players. And I think what happened in many ways was that with the philosophy and style of the three junior leagues, they were creating the skaters. The OHL, and which was the OHA then, and the old WCHL, where Danny Gare played, they were producing skill players, but they were more producing the old Rock'em Sock'em style of hockey players. So the skaters were in Quebec, and the tough guys were in Ontario and the West.
Yeah, well, and I mean, just think of consecutive years. 1970, Gilles Perreault goes number one. 1971, you know, Sam Pollock engineers like three trades, and Guy Lafleur goes number one. Marcel Dion, who's French-Canadian, but, and wasn't there something that happened? They never finished their playoff series, but, and I mention this because there was an incident today, John. Real Madrid was playing, they're playing Liverpool. I'm not going to tell anybody the score, but Real Madrid's bus got vandalized as it went in. And if I'm not mistaken, when the Ramparts played Dion's team, there was an incident with the buses that concluded
the reality of that was that Marcel Dion was born and raised in the province of Quebec, but elected to play junior hockey in Ontario. And so he played for the St. Catharines team in the OHA. And so when they did play in the postseason for the Memorial Cup, St. Catharines versus Quebec City, the people in Quebec never forgave Marcel. And the amount of vitriol and harassment that Dion took during that series was unbelievable.
You know, it's interesting. You talked about skill and what leagues are perceived as. Connor Bedard is playing in the Western League at 15. He's a special player. He can really shoot the puck. The kid with the Edmonton Oil Kings, I know Craig Button had him ranked number two for the NHL draft just on Monday on the TSN show. Bob McKenzie, previous to that, Dylan Gunther was ranked number three. Like, the WHL is now, there's been a real emphasis, John, on skill over the last. And I wonder if part of it, Ian, you might think I'm crazy, but you're in a market here in Edmonton. Gunther's from Edmonton. Bedard's from Vancouver. I'm wondering whether or not it has to do with when you have a player like a McDavid, the kids are sitting there watching that guy, and he plays right in your. You know what I'm saying? Because we had a run of goaltenders out of Quebec because of Patrick Waugh. We had a run of defensemen out of Sweden because of Nick Lidstrom. What do you think? Am I out to lunch there or on to something?
Well, usually I agree with you, but this time you're out to lunch. I think it's everywhere, Bob. I think the game has changed that much. I think the skills required to play the game at the speed now, it has changed everywhere. And simply because, you know, when you know, the big change in our lifetime was during the work stoppage in 2005. When the rules changed, I mean, Connor McDavid has never played really in a competitive game over the age of 7 or 8 with clutching and grabbing in his life. And you need speed, you need skill to compete. And I think that's true for everywhere in the game. Is Connor McDavid a role model for any kid in Northern Alberta? Absolutely. But he's a role model for everybody everywhere. As we watch the game around the world, is the game has changed. The flow in the game has changed. The value of Josh Anderson, Tom Wilson, even the tough guys have to have a ton of skill.
Can't be one dimensional.
Really, what's changed?
Yeah,
that's
can't
really
be one.
What's changed?
All right, let's get to the trade deadline. You joined us a couple times. You've had a chance to recalibrate your thoughts. First of all, your overall assessment on what Edmonton did. Was it enough? And conversely, was it prudent?
Prudent, yes. Enough. The measure will be in the first round of the playoffs. You know, it does what it does do is it protects the young guys on the blue line. Kulikov will be a difference maker. Here's my philosophy of what's happened in the North. Really, the measure and who everybody was trying to beat in the North is Winnipeg. Everybody was trying to beat Winnipeg. Everybody's measured Winnipeg, not Toronto, but Winnipeg. The Maple Leafs bulked up on depth because they know they have to face Winnipeg. The Oilers improved their defense because you've got those four lines of depth that the Jets have. And eventually, if you're going to get to the third round, it really, in my opinion, it will run through Winnipeg first before it runs through Toronto or Edmonton. And so everybody has, in the middle of the bullseye, the Winnipeg Jets. Because you're either going to play them in the first round or you're going to play them in the second round to get to the third round. And so what Kenny needed to do was, yes, address the defense first. Address the defense first, and he did that with Kulikov. What Toronto needed to do was improve their depth. When you look at the four forward lines Winnipeg puts out, and that's what he tried to do with Riley Nash, Nick Foligno, and even Ben Hutton on the blue line. Because, I mean, Ben Hutton should never play a single game for the Maple Leafs unless they get past everybody. And by then, everybody's going to be so banged up, you're going to need your ninth or tenth defenseman.
Interesting stuff. John, as always, we appreciate your time. We'll talk on Monday, okay?
Yes, sir.
It's 1:49 in Edmonton. That is John Shannon joining us, our NHL insider for Legacy Heating and Cooling. We're going to do a reset when we come back at about 1:51 here. You're listening to Oilers Now.
Hi, I'm James Neal from the Edmonton Oilers, and you're listening to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer on 630 CHED.
All right, let's update the Oilers Now lineup report brought to you by North 49 Home Inspections, professional and thorough home inspections for the Edmonton area. The Oilers have 22 players currently on the active roster, so these 22 players stay on for the rest of the season. McDavid, Draisaitl, Puljujärvi, Haas, Cahoon, Yamamoto, Kara, Shore, Archibald, Cassian, and Chiasson, 11 forwards. 8 defense, including the new addition, Kulikov. So that's Nurse and Barry, Russell and Lagesson, Jones and Bear. Russell and Larson. So Nurse and Barry, Russell and Larson, Jones and Bear, and then Kulikov and Lagesson. 8 defensemen active, 3 goaltenders active, Smith, Koskinen, and Stalock. There's your 22 active players right now. Edmonton's got 2 players on IR. One is RNH and one is Slater Cuckoo. They can just activate those guys. They do not count as one of the Oilers' 4 call-ups that they're allowed to make at some point. We've got 5 guys on taxi squad. James Neal, Tyler Ennis, Joakim Nygaard, Patrick Russell, Evan Bouchard, and they do count as recalls if and when the Oilers elect to move those guys in and out of the lineup. We'll also tell you that after the regular season, you no longer have to have players qualify as recalls. You can bring players up from the minors, et cetera, for this year. In the past, you had to wait until your team was eliminated from the AHL playoffs. Again, that is our Oilers Now lineup report for North 49 Home Inspections. We're going to go to this day in Oilers history. It is presented by Jason and Dennis Laliberti and the team at New West Travel. Go for it, Brendan.
Back in 1987, Marc Messier pops off for a goal and 3 helpers as the Oilers defeat Los Angeles 5-4 in Game 5 to win this playoff series 3-2 and eliminate the LA Kings. Glenn Anderson had the game-winning goal about halfway through the third at Northlands.
Coming up tonight on Inside Sports with Reid Wilkins from 6 until 8 p.m., Cam Moon from the Flames television broadcasts and NHL Hockey and Rogers, Kelly Rudy, Brendan Botcher, of course, top end curler, Randy Gregg about the Edmonton Riverhawks, and WDB in 2021 Hall of Fame inductee Don Wilson. We will be back tomorrow on Oilers Now, and our guests will include Louis DeBrusk, Kevin Weitz from the NHL Network for Canadian Power Pack, Alberta's leader in electrical construction service, electrical prefabrication and solar, and Edmonton sporting icon George LaRocque. Coming up today on 630 Chet Afternoons with Jalen Nye, University of Alberta Students Union says the funding cuts from the provincial government mean the average student will now have to pay almost 24% more in tuition. The association's president, Joel Agarwal, will join Jalen and I after a global news, weather, traffic update at 2 o'clock with Eileen Bell. Have a terrific Thursday. It's Wednesday. Have a wicked Wednesday, everybody.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 Chad.